is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Whoa, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be now. Where did all the blue skies go? Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Oh, oh, mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Oh, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more the view from man? Can't you stand?
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Okay, better there is much better. Anyway, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. A lovely Sunday morning here. We're going to be talking about Mahaulepu and the dairy, the Hawaii dairy farms out in that area on the island of Kauai. And there's been a number of talks about it. And I have invited Mrs. Bridget Hammerquist and from friends of Mahaulepu on the island of Kauai. And there's some concerns and hopefully we can talk about them. I will reach out for the developer or the person that is planning this, which is Ulupono Initiatives, and we'll reach out for them in the coming week or so. And I've asked questions of the state requesting some records from them, so we'll take it in parts. But anyway, I have Ms. Hammerquist on the phone now, and she's going to join me. Good morning, Bridget. Are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Okay. We just had a little glitch here. Someone turns them all down when we... Anyway, thank you for joining me, and I appreciate all that you've shared with me on this. And if you could, give us a little background on yourself. A little background on yourself and the debate and the issues that regarding the proposed dairy.
sure. Apologize for my dog going off.
That's okay.
Somebody knocked on the door. I am someone who has a background in biology. Mm-hmm. I worked about 12 years as a nurse. Then I was supporting some young people, went to law school, and spent 25 years as a civil litigator and did trial work in Orange County. Served the last 2 years in as a mediator and also as a third-party designated jurist hearing cases, actually doing trials. And finally retired to help my daughter raise three children and came home to my roots. I was born and raised in Hawaii.
Okay.
So I came back to Kauai, where my parents are buried, and my family history began in Hawaii in 1937 with the arrival of my mother, and my dad came in 1939, and they met, and there were five of us born here. Mm-hmm. So this is home for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I noticed that one of the things, and thanks for sharing your response to Rosemarie Bernardo, in the Star Advertiser, I think she wrote an article on, it was Friday, this past Friday, and the title was Health Department Allows Permits for Dairy Farm on Kauai. And I know we have many of things, so feel free to approach it anyway. And there's also, and again, thanks for sharing with me, the fact sheet supplied by Hawaii Dairy Farms. And maybe we could start with that, and maybe there's some points in that in this article that you raise some concerns. And clearly there's many more, and we'll get to them.
Well, it's a large operation, and for people who know Kauai, Mahulepu, or basically the start of the South Shore coastline, because as you travel from Mahulepu just a little bit south on foot, you get to Shipwreck Beach, and then there are private homes, and then Brenneke Beach and Poipu Beach, and then the bay at the Sheraton. That's our home in this area, and it's a very popular visitor destination. It's a really beautiful area. It's clean. There are a lot of endangered species that live here, Carol, a lot of them endemic to the area. We have the Kaloa duck. We have the blind cave spider. We have a lot of native Hawaiian plants in the valley, some that are still used by Hawaiians here on the island for medicinal purposes. So Mahalapu Valley is kind of a wilderness area, so far undeveloped, used for agriculture, and I think all of us on the island are not opposed to it being used for agriculture at all. But this is a proposal for an industrial-scale dairy, starting with between 650 and 699 cows arriving impregnated, with a plan that the herd will grow to 2,000, and it will occupy 578 acres, something less than 500 for grazing, the rest for calving barns, raceways, milking parlor, sheds, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big footprint to put into Mahalapu Valley. And so for those of us who live here, we started, you know, to inquire, what will this do? What will it be like? I don't have any background in dairy. I used to ride with Mr. Thompson at Parker Ranch. I attended Hawaii Preparatory Academy for 3 years when my family lived on the Big Island. And so I have some sense of dealing with cattle and horses, and really learned to love it.
Mm-hmm.
But dairying is a little different creature. And so when we looked into it, the biggest dilemma was that the valley is comprised primarily of a clay-based soil. There are some soils in there that perk, some not well, and some that don't perk at all. And the plan for the dairy is that all the cow's waste is to lay where it falls.
Mm-hmm.
And that which falls in the milking parlor or the raceways when they're being moved around, and apparently they do pass waste when they're being milked, is washed down and collected in effluent ponds, and it will sit in the effluent pond and then be pumped back onto pastures through overhead irrigation devices. So it's all to stay on the farm. There's no plan to take any of the waste away. There's no plan to use it for a fuel source. It's just supposed to be used for fertilization of the pasture land. So we started looking at it with the thought of, you know, will that stay where it falls? And that's what kind of got us into a bit of a dilemma, because the amount of waste produced by that many animals is huge. I think I sent you something that shows that the dairy farm itself reported that each of their cows will produce 143 pounds of wet manure a day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a volume that's the same size as my weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hard to imagine, and I know I had one neighbor kind of take me on and say, are you for real? There's no way. But I said, well, hey, look it up on the Internet. And she called me back, and she goes, oh, my God, you're right. They do produce that much. So it was, you know, 3 million pounds a month of manure, and it's month after month after month. And for any of those on in the world or any of your listeners that have ridden, manure doesn't just disappear that fast. I mean, it stays on the ground for a while. It liquefies, and there we have the ocean. You know, a mile away, a beautiful bay, lots of endangered species, and manure happens to be some pretty toxic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the meetings that the dairy farm had. They had a couple public meetings. The mayor here suggested that they share their plan with the public, which I'm grateful they did. It would have been awful. I mean, for many of us, it was hard to handle the fact that it had been a plan supposedly underway for 5 years, and it wasn't disclosed to the public until, as Amy Hennessy said, they were ready to. And when they were ready to, they handed out the fact sheet that I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
And they made claims in that fact sheet, and many of us accepted them. You know, when we saw them, I mean, people in the audience, the first two meetings I attended, people in the audience said, you know, if you don't have state permits yet, how are you moving all that earth around out there? How are you taking out trees?
How are you grading and grubbing?
How are you grading and grubbing? Exactly. And they said, well, our NRCS permit is completed. And they put that in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And they handed us a document that says NRCS permit completed. That's exactly what it says. And so I thought, well, okay, they've done something. They've met some standard. So let's find out what it takes to get an NRCS permit. And I contacted Donna Hopwood, who's the Assistant Field Service Director of the NRCS office in Oahu, and she took my call and said, you know, basically, what are you talking about? The NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service,
mm-hmm.
doesn't issue permits. And I said, I beg your pardon? And we went from there. And so I have a little problem with this operation, because as I tried to understand what it's going to be like, how will it benefit us, how might it hurt us, I did what I did in my former career, and that is I enlisted the help of experts. And one of them was a fellow that was very gracious with his time. He's a professor at the University of Nebraska, and his name is William Kranz.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at their plan, and he had several admonitions, and said, you know, too many cows on too little acreage, and it's going to be too big a volume of waste for the environment to handle. It will leave nitrogen toxicity behind. The phosphorus will go into the water. You'll have nutrients in the water. You'll have an algae bloom. It'll cost reefs, and you need to look into this, because he said it really doesn't make sense to put this kind of an operation that close to the ocean. The other thing they did in their initial presentation was to say we were emulating a New Zealand model, and it works well in New Zealand, and we're sure it's going to work even better here because this is a more ideal climate even than New Zealand. New Zealand has defined climates. It has hard winters. At times, it has more changes.
Mm-hmm. Climatical changes.
Yeah. And so, you know, the grasses are going to grow better here. Everything's going to do better here. So we can even ramp it up and have a more concentrated grazing pattern than they have there. And when we had to go find out what's happening in New Zealand. And I think you might have seen that on our website, friendsofmahalapu.org, we gathered a number of New Zealand articles and reports from the internal governmental bodies and their independent parliamentary commissioner for the environment. And we found, Carol, that in New Zealand, they're facing and dealing with now a nationwide pollution problem from their dairy industry. And they call it the rush for white gold. And so they've started to respond because of the degradation of their freshwater. They estimate that approximately 60% of the freshwater in the country is not safe for human contact. And they've started to clean up, and they've asked dairies to move back from rivers, streams, and estuaries. So they recognize that manure doesn't stay where it falls. It liquefies, it runs, and if it can run into water, that water then is the freight train that'll take it to other bodies of water, and the bacteria spreads. So we do have a problem, and as Professor Kranz taught me, in the state of Nebraska, if an entity comes in and they apply for a permit to do an animal feed operation, and in the process they misrepresent any aspect of their operation, they basically get uninvited by the state. The state gives them back their application and says, you may want to try another state. And in a way, I feel that Hawaii Dairy Farms has done that here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't mean to sound too strong. I'm not a rabid person. You know, I'm not an eccentric. I'm not somebody that gets on causes. This is probably the first community effort I've ever been involved in. But they really have not been truthful with the public. I mean, to say they have an NRCS permit completed when no such thing exists.
When there's no process.
They have an NRCS plan approval that they're going to stay by when they don't have an NRCS conservation plan. Those are big misrepresentations.
Mm-hmm.
To say they're following an ideal dairy model from New Zealand when the dairy industry in New Zealand and the government of New Zealand have now formed a dairy guild. They're working together to try and clean up the mess.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't share any of that with us. They said there's no odor, there won't be a problem with flies. Their current plan can be viewed. All three of the plans they've submitted to the State Department of Health are actually uploaded onto our website.
And that website again is?
friendsofmahalapu.org.
Okay.
And in their current, most recent plan, filed July 23rd with the State Department of Health Wastewater Branch, there isn't any mention of flies in the entire document. And yet the state has, which I think I sent you a copy of, they have their waste nutrient guideline management practices guide that they print and they require anyone who's going to do an animal feed operation to follow. And
mm-hmm.
it says, there shall be a plan for pest abatement for flies, rodents, and any other pests that are likely to be attracted to the animal waste. I mean, this is a no-brainer. Anybody that's ever been around a farm knows that manure attracts flies.
Mm-hmm.
They love to breed in it. And I have to send you, Carol, a letter that was done for our mayor by a retired entomologist on island. His name is Carlos White. He's the executive director of a journal publication called Folklore, and he's rather well regarded in the industry of industrial entomology. And he contacted the mayor and members of our hui and then joined the hui himself to say, you know, this is going to be real and it's going to be voluminous and there are going to be billions of flies within months because each fly lays up to 1,000 eggs. Our ideal climate, our moisture level, they're going to hatch. There's no pest management of any kind planned right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you'll have black clouds. You'll see black clouds over Mahalapu, and you'll see them, and you'll think, what are those clouds? And then they'll move while you're watching it. And he said, you'll realize they're fly.
Now, if we could get some specifics here. In the article in the Star Advertiser Friday, last Friday, the project did not, this is a quote, the project did not require an environmental assessment, but in response to odor and other environmental concerns, Ulupono General Partner Kyle Data says that the project will voluntarily conduct an environmental impact statement. Now, he said there will be no construction until the regulators have accepted the environmental review. Let me ask you, somewhere I read they were already grubbing and grading prior to this. Would that constitute work and construction? Is that outside of the, quote, the environmental assessment?
No, it's not outside the environmental assessment, but it isn't considered construction of a structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's ag preparation, and they were supposed to submit a conservation plan to mm-hmm. get their grubbing and grading permit, and there was some confusion about that, and our West Kauai Soil and Water Conservation District were really faced with something they had never dealt with before, because we don't have any industrial scale dairies over here. Our largest dairy that we've ever had in Kauai was at Maloa, and it was a Meadow Gold operation, and the most cattle that it ever had was, the greatest number was 400 cows. And, you know, to kind of put this in perspective, Carol, I was somewhat impressed by the new dairy on the Big Island. There's two of them, and one of them, Mauna Kea Moo, has 200 dairy cows and 100 beef cattle, and it's received approval from Department of Health to operate on both the construction phase and the operation phase, because there has to be approvals on both phases according to the waste management guidelines that the state has put out. And they're on 2,000 acres, and they're going to produce milk and cheese with 200 cows. When you get up to 699 cows, I mean, you're really producing it. Basic math. It's basically mm-hmm. 7,000 gallons of milk a day. Because they milk the cows twice a day, and they get 5 to 6 gallons with each milking. So if you take the most conservative number, each cow is going to produce 10 gallons of milk per day. And it's basically a big industrial operation. It's not your garden variety,
mm-hmm.
independent or sustainable farm. It's not sustainable at all. It imports grain to feed them. It ships the milk off-island to be processed, pasteurized, and sold by Meadow Gold. And I think that statement by Mr. Data is somewhat suspect.
Mm-hmm. Now, regarding statements and what have you, the number of cows coming in, will they be impregnated prior to arrival, or will they impregnate them here? And what is the gestation period that... There will be one parent, one offspring, or whatever they give. What is the period of time with that herd increase just from the population, their initial population import?
In all of their website, they have a website, Hawaii Dairy Farms, and they have a frequently asked question page. In all of the information they've given the public, they've indicated the cows would arrive impregnated. And I would imagine they will be far enough along to safely travel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, generally, you don't travel right in the very first trimester. Their gestation period is not too different from ours.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they arrive, they are going to have to go into quarantine for a while by our State Department of Agriculture standards. And then they'll get released. And they, in their most recent press release, last Wednesday, they said in a matter of months, the herd will grow. And I think that's probably accurate. It'll be somewhere 3 to 5 months after they are on the farm that they'll be calving. The reason for the impregnation is because they don't lactate until they're pregnant. They don't produce milk.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we were told by Hawaii Dairy Farms that that was the plan, that they would be impregnated, shipped in, kept in quarantine, then released if everything was found that they were in good health, and they would be taken to the farm, and they would begin their milk operation.
Hmm.
And so his statement of a magnanimous gesture of doing an EIS when they forced Kauai-Loa Development to initiate litigation just to request environmental assessment, the reason I said that was somewhat suspect is because they've also been polluting for the last 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
There is question about, you know, what's causing the bacteria. It's really high. It's as high as the Alawai Canal right now. What's causing the high nutrient load? And they're attributing those two items of elevation to feral animals in the valley. And they say that, you know, the feral animals that are already there, the pigs, the chickens, the Kauai duck, are producing those high counts. But there's also another measure that's been confirmed by the state of Hawaii, and that's the turbidity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the amount of mud and grub in the waters coming from the farm. And that they can't attribute to local feral animals. That's the dairy farm. And that turbidity level has been high since March of this year when they started grubbing and grading.
Mm-hmm.
And
that
was persisted.
That was my next question as to the grub and grading activity. Was there any, was it under guidance or observation of the state or the county, whoever, usually here in the, it's the county, but were there conditions and best BMPs required, or were they just allowed to grade?
They were allowed to grade. It was an exemption is what they got. They actually got a grading and grubbing exemption.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I'm sure the county sent somebody out at some point to see what they were doing. But this is agricultural land, and generally in the preparation of pastures, there are not a lot of standards. I mean, it's not like somebody says, oh, you can only move so many yards of dirt here, and you have to apply for a different permit. If they're creating pasture land, they pretty much get a carte blanche to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the difficulty is that they're supposed to be good stewards of the land, and they're supposed to exercise best management practices. And there's a certain amount that the state and the county have to rely on, you know, the conscientious, honest caring of the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And most farmers, I think, in general are. In this case, I know we went to a Lihue Business Association meeting at the end of March, and they had representatives from the dairy farm there, and they were happy to tell us that they'd reopened the irrigation ditches, and they'd widened them and cleaned them out and gotten all the stuff out of them, and now the farm was draining better because the soil, as I said, was clay and wasn't draining well. And one of the attendees asked the question, and she had to ask it more than one time. It wasn't myself. Actually, I hadn't met the woman yet. And but she said, you know, where do those ditches drain that are taking this stuff off the farm? And finally, the gentleman speaking, Doyle Waybright, said, well, they drain to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing further was said. But we've since seen aerial photographs of the ditches, and they're, you know, 6 to 8 feet wide. They're deep, and they pretty routinely carry a pretty large body of muddy water. And that's going out to sea, and it's going out to sea with whatever is on the surface of the farm. We did send photographs to the state and the EPA because the photographs established that the raceway... they've given the measurement of the raceway. And so the raceway runs right alongside, about 6 to 8 feet from the ditch. So the cows are going to be moved up through the center of the farm to the milking parlor twice a day to be milked, and then they're moved back onto pasture. And as they travel from their pastures up to the milking parlor and back, they get, they defecate.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the distance of 8 feet from the ditches or 10 feet from the ditches in some place is not a big distance. When we get a rainstorm, that manure is going to liquefy, the urine is going to flow, it can't be held, it'll be on the ground. And when 700 cows are peeing, you know, that's, they're all peeing, you know,
mm-hmm.
5 to 10 gallons a day. And that's running somewhere, and it's going into these ditches, and it's going right out to sea. So I don't think they really had permission, as you think of it, but apparently there really isn't anything in place that guides where they open the irrigation ditches and what they drain to, except for our Clean Water Act, which
mm-hmm.
is enforced by the state, originates from the Environmental Protection Agency. The EPA is charged with enforcing the Clean Water Act, and in the state of Hawaii, as you probably know, their enforcement arm is the Department of Health, and they have a Clean Water Branch, and they receive a lot of federal funding to carry this out during the year. But they're there to make sure the waters of the state, the Class A waters, don't get contaminated with turbidity, nutrients, which is another nice way of saying waste, or bacteria.
Ammonia and...
Yeah, ammonia, nitrates, phosphorus.
Let me ask you a question regarding, you know, they did the grubbing and they were, did they stop?
Well, basically they completed, they grubbed and graded beginning in late February, actually.
Okay.
Through early July.
Mm-hmm.
And they planted grass. They planted kikuyu grass. And that was another area of major misrepresentation. So we have the NRCS conservation plan that doesn't exist. We have an NRCS permit completed that doesn't exist. We have a wonderful model in New Zealand that's not really so wonderful because New Zealand is suffering from a lot of pollution problems, and that can be found by anybody.
And we don't want to adopt their New Zealand policies when apparently it appears that it had some failure.
Oh yeah, their policies now are probably going to help them clean up. Mm-hmm. It was a situation where they really didn't have them
in place at the time.
Right, right.
So it's all after the fact, and we'll find ourselves in a similar predicament, you suspect?
That's what we're working hard to keep from happening. You know, we don't really think there's a need to reinvent that wheel and risk our entire coastline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really a difficult situation. But now I have to get my thought here about where I was going with this. So we had those misrepresentations, and then you had asked me, where were we, Carol?
Well, if you hold that thought, there was a follow-up to that, was the NPDES permit, because the state wastewater branch on the Sena Pruder, how about the clean water branch? This is going to be a massive introduction of runoff from a facility. Is there an NPDES permit presented or applied for, or is it necessary? How are they going to allow them to skirt that, or when will they?
Well, you know, actually, the law changed mm-hmm. in 2013 with a Fifth Circuit decision that said the NPDES permit, just to help your listeners who don't know, is a pollution permit. It's actually a permit to pollute, and mm-hmm. what it is they go into the state agencies and they say, here's what our discharge will be, and it'll be only this much, and they get a permit for it because they're staying underneath a threshold that's mm-hmm. not likely to cause any damage and not likely to have permanent pollution. And they used to be able to require a farmer to do an environmental impact study and put in for a national pollution discharge
mm-hmm.
Permit, but the court said, well, if the farmer tells you they're not going to discharge, and they tell you they're going to keep their waste on their site, you can't force them to get an NPDES permit.
Mm-hmm.
But once there is an unlawful discharge, then you can require a permit, and you can require an environmental impact statement. And that's where I was going when we were speaking a minute ago, and that is that what has happened is, in the grubbing and grading, the Blue Water Task Force division of a Kauai Surf Rider Branch
mm-hmm.
started testing early on. Thankfully, they did. They were just intending to establish a baseline. They were testing the fresh waters coming from the farm in the Waiopili stream, and they were testing the waters at the beach where it receives the stream to see, you know, what are the numbers normally, and to have a baseline so that once, if the dairy did begin operating, they would know whether or not there was pollution. In the course of trying to establish a baseline, they came up with this really high pollution level. And so they started sending in their reports regularly to the Department of Health, to the Clean Water Branch, and Watsonook will receive them. And finally, by July, the Department of Health came and conducted their own tests and confirmed the readings. They got readings that were comparable to those of the Surf Rider Blue Water Task Force. So they approached Hawaii Dairy Farms and Grove Farm, who is the landowner, and said, you know, what's the source? What's going on? And at that point, the grubbing and grating had stopped, but there was a lot that had been introduced into the waters, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did recent testing in October, and that time Hawaii Dairy Farm said, we want to test as well. And they ran samples through a lab on Oahu, and the Department of Health used their state laboratories, very sophisticated systems, and they didn't agree on the numbers. But the Surf Rider Blue Water Task Force ran a study at the same time and got the same numbers as the state, and the dairy farm got half the numbers. So they retested November 5th and 6th. More samples were pulled, and the results of that testing we don't have yet.
Mm-hmm. Now, I asked that question because I thought in the same vein of where he's volunteering to do an environmental impact study.
Yes.
And I would think that the historical use of that land, the chemicals and pesticides and herbicides that were there still exist there and cling to the soils. And a lot of it is clay, am I correct? A large portion of it?
Yes.
So
there was another thing that they kept from the public. In fact, it was found by an agricultural engineer hired by the Kualoa development, the neighbor to the farm, the closest neighbor, other than the Gillen House, which is a residential house that's pretty close to the farm. And this agricultural engineer went on the website, and lo and behold, he found that the NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Services, had done a custom soil resource report. It's entitled Custom Soil Resource Report for the Island of Kauai. And when he attached it to his report, and I was looking through a copy of the report, at first I thought I was going to be seeing soil studies for the island of Kauai. But it wasn't. It was just the dairy farm site. And I thought, well, this is dated June 5th of this year. Where did this come from? And why hasn't anybody known about it? And I called Donna Hopwood down at the NRCS office on Oahu and said, well, who knew? Where was this? And she said, well, that engineer found it, so you have it now. And I said, well, how is it that it's on the World Wide Web? She said, well, it isn't anything we did for the client, so we do post it on the web. It is a general conservation assessment of the farm soils and their compatibility with an animal feed operation where there's going to be a land application of waste. And the NRCS study, Carol, found that they divided the farm up into 51 sections. And 33 of the 51, they said, were very limited in their ability to tolerate a land waste application. And what that they concluded was it was going to be at very high risk for runoff. They set out tables and they labeled the parts of the farm. They said high or very high risk for runoff. So discharge, once it happens, and in fact it has happened for the last 7 months, can and does empower the feds and the state to require either the tenant or the landowner to go through an environmental impact statement.
Mm-hmm.
And so my suspicion is that the 7 months or 8 months of waste runoff is something that motivated Hawaii Dairy Farms to go to an EIS.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're doing it voluntarily. If they are, great. because that's what's really important, is to get in there and assess it. Can this environment handle that land waste application? The NRCS is on record with a report that shows that more than 50% of the farm won't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
More than 50% of the farm site, I should say, won't handle the manure and urine and keep it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It will liquefy, it will run off. And I think you mentioned that you watched the neighborhood center meeting that we had, the town meeting that we
mm-hmm.
had. There's a copy of it on our website at friendsofmahalapu.org. People can go and watch it. And one of the people that spoke on behalf of friendsofmahalapu.org is a gentleman who studied environmental soil and, in fact, did his major work on, one of his major studies was on the degradation of manure on different types of soils and how it breaks down. And Rolly Polari explained to us, when it first comes out of the cow, it's positively charged. In a couple of days, when the ammonia burns off, it becomes negatively charged. And then it doesn't bind as well with the dirt or the grass or the object that it's sitting on. And in fact, it gets kind of mushy on the underside. It gets
mm-hmm.
liquidy.
Mm-hmm.
On the top, it gets dried a little bit, provided it's not raining. And it starts to slip and slide.
Mm-hmm.
And another member of the Hui who came and identified herself and asked if she could join us, wonderful woman who was with the EPA in the state of Washington for 30 some years. And she said, you guys are right to be concerned. She said, I was up in a plane. We had aerial photographs in the state of Washington, and we could see, and we showed the farmers. That's how we really turned them around, she said, there, and made them take the steps they needed to protect the fresh water. She said, you could actually see the manure liquefying and running right toward the streams and then down into the rivers. And so when you think about the waste that this operation is going to produce, 3 million pounds of manure a month, 210,000 gallons a month,
mm-hmm.
where is it going to go, Carol?
Yeah. Now, speaking of that, we talk about the marine environment and the potential impacts there. We know that there's decline in degraded coral reefs around Kauai and around these islands as well. But what impacts, or have they been addressed or identified or ruled out on the drinking water in the aquifers? We talk about runoff, and you mentioned earlier percolation factor. What is being done to address the impacts of this material percolating down to the drinking waters or the aquifers? Or maybe the aquifers in that area are not used for drinking? I don't know the area well, so.
No, as it turns out, we learned that Mahulepu is home to quite a number of aquifers.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got a copy of the dairy plan, they listed two wells, Kloa Well C and Kloa Well F. And the only one they mentioned in their plan, they said Kloa Well F, was more than a half mile from the dairy facility. They explained later that what they meant by that was it was more than a half mile from the effluent pond. But what we found when we looked at their plan, and anybody can look at this, is that they have a plan to de-sludge the effluent pond. In other words, after a period of time, the effluent pond collects this washed manure and urine, you know, and it goes into this big pond, and the manure settles to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
The green water goes to the top, and they dilute it and spray it back on the pastures. But the solids build up at the bottom, and they have to then de-sludge is what they call it, and they have to pump that out and empty it, or they're going to overflow their effluent pond. So one of the areas that they're planning to de-sludge on the west side of the farm, lower west side of the farm, it's an 81-acre parcel that they put on their map. It's intended for manure and sludge. Happens to have some of the few well-draining parts of the farm. And so when I saw that and I went back, you can go between the pages. In the early pages of the plan, they identify the pastures by the paddocks by number, and they actually put a little key on them that indicates what soil type that pasture is. And you can look at the soil type key and see whether it's well-draining not poor draining, moderately well draining, you can actually see what the category is. And so as we studied the type of soil in those areas that are going to desludge, there was quite a few of the pads that were well draining. And we thought, okay, that's why they're going to dump the sludge there. But lo and behold, we noticed when we went back to the earlier pages to get the numbers of those pastures and the soil type, we noticed the wells were right outside the pasture border. So we contacted the Kauai Water Company and said, what do coal wells CNF do? Where does that water go? And they put me in touch with an engineer that was responsible. And I said I was calling because I had been working on this proposed dairy project and trying to understand. And he said, and there's a dairy that's going in, you know, at Mahalapu. And he said, what dairy? And they hadn't actually presented a plan to the Kauai Water Department at all because they don't intend to use county water because there are so many aquifers. They intend to use the natural aquifers under Mahalapu. But as the agricultural engineer pointed out, that area, that body of water, recharges Kauai well CF, and the engineer taught me there's a third well. And I said, well, where do those waters go, Kauai CF and D? He said, well, they provide all the fresh water for Poipu and most of Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? I said, well, Mr. Silvestri, they're planning to dump sludge within 700 feet of that well. And it looks like approximately 750 feet from the second well because I'm using their own maps. They had a map key at the bottom that showed that 1 inch was approximately 750 feet. And he asked me if I had a copy of the plan and could I send it to him electronically, which I did. Then he mapped out and sent back to me where Kauai Well D was, showing me that there was a third well there that they hadn't included. And so we went from there, and the county did look at it. There's an issue about the what they call the water recharge area, which is the area on groundwater that is perceived to go down and add to the wells. There's a certain amount of surface water coming from rain in the mountains that adds to these wells. And so what's going to happen when the surface is covered with manure? Or worse yet, when you've pumped concentrated sludge right onto the top of the dirt and the grass within 750 feet of those wells.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're very concerned about that. And nobody has an answer to it yet, but the environmental impact study hopefully will help with that. I mean, those are the kinds of things that really need to be addressed. And, you know, from everything we've seen, Carol, it just doesn't seem like the right place for a big collection of cows.
Mm-hmm.
Not so close to the ocean.
Well, Bridget, we're coming down to the last few minutes of this hour. If you, as I shared with you earlier, if you care to continue, we can talk more in the next hour. But this is the Carol Cox Show, and you're listening to a discussion regarding the Hawaii Dairy Plan dairy farm on Kauai. And Bridget Hammerquist is my guest. Anyway, Bridget, go ahead. And what about, if you could speak, do you think that the government agencies are being timely or transparent or open with this process? Or do you suspect or have you seen anything that give you concerns that there is some kind of, I'll use my own words, hanky-panky? And these are not your words, but causing concern that the process is not open and transparent to the public.
Well, we didn't start there. I really felt, you know, the state was concerned. I talked with the wastewater chief. We actually met with them. They were great. They let us come down and sit and talk to them. And met with Sina Pruder, who was the chief of the wastewater branch, and Alec Wong, who's the chief of the clean water branch. But over time, you know, you begin to kind of go, this is not squaring. You know, it's just not squaring. And most recently, you know, there was a release in early October that our governor had joined a company owned by Pierre Midiard. And that bothers you, that elected officials, you know, I mean, I know he's a billionaire, and I know he has influence. I remember reading the article by the woman who was head of the Hawaii Honolulu Business Council, who said, why don't we just, you know, step back and let them try it. What's all the noise about on Kauai, about this dairy? And I'm thinking, what? Step back and let them try it? You've got homes, you've got lives, you've got biting flies. Flies carry disease. Carlos White's article talks about how awful those flies are. When they come in their numbers and their billions, they go to people. They bite them. Mm-hmm. And they communicate diseases from the cows to people. And it's, we're not talking about something that's just this little safe, benign operation. It's a toxic operation. Cow manure is referred to as a toxic substance. And recent, I think I sent you a couple recent publications, have equated cow manure with human waste as far as its ability to make for very serious health problems.
And the medication that is required does not disappear, so in their urine and in their waste.
No.
These
and it
hormones
also makes the bacteria stronger, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
That's the real risk. If they're on antibiotics, if you go to the website and you read about what their plan is for the feed for these cows, they're going to supplement 30% of their feed, daily feed, with grain that's imported. They're going to give them antibiotics because they know they've got a big herd and they're in close proximity. They're grazing all 700 cows on 24 to 27 acres a day, and then they move them to the next 24 to 27 acres. It's called a rotational grazing pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts a concentrated amount of poop and pee in an area. It also concentrates the animals right up to each other, so they have to treat them with antibiotics. Their own bacteria then becomes resistant
mm-hmm.
to antibiotics, and so then when we get sick, it's harder for the doctors to treat us because now we've got super bacteria that we're getting infected with.
Yeah, this process is a 24-hour fitness center for the bacteria, it seems, if that's the way I like to describe it. you're getting injected. You have all the antibiotics, and so you learn to resist them, and you're stronger.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're down at the last minute, and if you care to continue this conversation, we can. And you know, would you like to? Is there anything else you would like to share with us?
Well, there's, I don't know the nature of your questioning. I'm happy to respond and stay on if you'd like me to.
Okay. Well, let's do that.
We really care about what's happening, and we're scared.
Yeah, well, let's do that, and we'll come back in the next 10 minutes, and if you would, please, you can hang up and call back.
Okay.
All righty. Well, thank you, Bridget.
Thank you, Carol.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu.
This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
And good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Had an earlier discussion. We're going to continue. Have Miss Bridget Hammerquist on. And let me make sure I give you some contact information for their site, and I will also give you some contact for the Hawaii Dairy Farmers. You can go to, for an email, let's get this right, www.hawaiidairyfarms.com, and to, as on their fact sheet that they gave. And for Bridget and her organization, Friends of Mahalapu, .org, and that's Friends of Mahalapu .org, and a contact phone number would be 742-1037 for the Friends of Mahalapu, and for the contact person for the Hawaii Dairy Farms and Ulupono Initiative would be Amy Hennessy, and she can be reached at 808-544-8973. So anyway, I hope you're enjoying this conversation, and feel free to call in 524-1080 if you have any questions or comments. Good morning again, Bridget, and thank you for calling back.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, I want, if we could, to go through this fact sheet real quickly, if are you up to that?
Okay, I'll try, sure.
And I basically, I'll read them if you have any comments. Or this is the Hawaii Dairy Farms fact sheet. The farm was designed using area historical rainfall data to accommodate extreme flooding, drought. Cows will be rotated out of areas with standing water to allow for drainage and pasture rejuvenation. The second one is that a steady state operation, there will be roughly 1,800 Kiwi cross cows at the dairy farm. Non-milking cows, calves, bulls will be managed in partnership with local ranchers off-site. So there's going to be other impacts at other areas. And will this environmental assessment include those areas too, those that are part or supporting this operation?
The environmental assessment is going to look at what their operation is going to do at that site.
Specific site, but not to the other the activities that they're supporting.
Primarily those activities that you mentioned are intended for the site. The fact that they ship some of the bulls off to other local ranchers isn't really... most of our local ranches, for instance, the Gay and Robinson operation... on island, and they have recently built a beautiful slaughterhouse. Their cattle graze on 50,000 acres, so there's no animal density issue there. They have ample pasture land, and so I don't anticipate that they will necessarily have to do an environmental impact for cows that go off to one of the other dairies.
Just curious.
Not one of the dairies, but one of the other ranchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it says 152 paddocks allows up to for six groups of 300 to 330 cows to rotate through their own set of 18 pasture over 18 days, allowing even application of manure, urine for proper fertilization and wastewater management.
Yeah, they have narrowed that down to 119.
Okay.
They recognize from the questions that were submitted by our group and Malama Mahalapu has been very active as well, another group, that they had initially, they had the paddocks at 3 acres, and they were going to use six parcels a day of 3 acres. That's where they got the 18
okay.
acres, and it was too small. And so they increased the size of the paddock and lowered the number to 119.
Mm-hmm.
One of the parts that you just read me, though, did key me to a memory. You know, in addition to their non-disclosure of the NRCS study, one of the other things they did is they really didn't report the accurate rainfall reading. And when we saw the numbers that they were relying on for their stormwater calculations, we contacted the state hydrologist, Kevin Kodama on Oahu, and he happened to have rain gauge readings from Mahalapu. There's a rain gauge in there that go back some 50 years, and he had it on an Excel spreadsheet back to 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So we obtained a copy, and we gave it to the state. And the dairy farm did agree that they had the wrong numbers, and they corrected their numbers and increased the rainfall from a storm condition up to 10 inches in a 24-hour period. And they had initially started at something like 1.89 inches.
So as this thing develops or as it reveals itself, you folks are having input, and they're actually responding to you in a positive fashion, you would say?
They've responded
to some degree,
so
I should say.
Us. I think they've responded to the state.
Okay.
I think basically what we haven't really found that they work with the community. I know Malama Mahalapu members, Greg Peters and Beryl Blake, have been very active meeting with Amy Hennessy, trying to persuade them to downsize the herd to get a smaller number in there that would be less detrimental to the environment. Because there's some sacred Hawaiian sites in there. There's all these native plants, there's these native species, and none of them are going to do well with manure, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they've really tried very hard, and I think they've had a lot of meetings with the dairy farm. And as Beryl said to me, she finally has gotten to the point where they've agreed to disagree because it's not working directly with them. So
mm-hmm.
our approach has been to take information and material to the state as concerned citizens and say, here is the difference between what they presented to you and what is factually correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then the state has taken it from there, and in some places they have called them on it,
mm-hmm.
which we're grateful for. But you asked about their being open,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I said we have had a feeling that there's pressure being brought to bear on the state chief, wastewater chief, and on Alec Wong, and on the director,
mm-hmm.
to get this thing through. Most recently, we met with them October 1st, and Sita Pruder announced that she wasn't going to do anything further. She hadn't approved the operation, and she hadn't disapproved the operation. She was taking no further action. And we all kind of sat there stunned, because their waste management guideline, which I sent you a copy of, actually has a Roman numeral header for the DOH approval process for construction and the DOH approval process for operation.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to abdicate and say we're not going to approve it and we're not going to unapprove it, it's like, well, what is it going to be? And now I notice in the press release that Kyle Data put out Wednesday before Thanksgiving, he said that the EIS will be presented to the Department of Health and it will be used to review their overall operation. So it may be that the state is going to do what the guidelines said the state is charged with doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we would hope that's the case. There has been a lot of confusion because the headlines, you know, permits granted, everybody thinks this is a done deal, this dairy's going in. But if you read carefully in that print,
mm-hmm.
it says that the DOH has approved the dairy to seek building permits.
Right.
So that's the construction phase of the permits. Although, to his credit, and we're really grateful for it, Kyle Data has said nothing will be constructed until the EIS is complete. I also noticed, though, that our mayor made the same statement in the Garden Island article on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our mayor is coming to appreciate what we're all saying, and that it's not hard, Carol. This isn't, you know, this isn't rocket science. Why should this island receive this load of waste in a beautiful ancient valley on a gorgeous coastline that raises the revenue that drives 25% of our annual economy? For milk that's going to get shipped elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
sold, processed, bottled, and they've said right in their plan to the state, they are going to meet international hygiene milking standards. And we went and met with the sanitation branch of the Department of Health, four of us. And we were told, don't worry, they're going to meet international milking standards. And we said, well, what are those? Why is that special? And they said, because they want to sell the milk to the military. They want to sell it to cruise ships. They want the buyer, Metalgold, to be able to sell it internationally if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they have to meet this standard. And because they're meeting this standard, you can rest assured that the milk produced will be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what's going to happen to the land in the process?
Right.
And why should our island be, why should this South Shore be wrecked for that effort?
Especially, we could, a farm of this nature or small or whatever might be accepted, but you don't want to destroy or throwing the baby out with the bathwater. The impacts, you want to mitigate them and minimize them, I'm sure.
Yes, and Grow, that's exactly right. Grow Farm manages and owns 44,000 acres on this island. And for many of us, it's really difficult to imagine that there isn't some, you know, inland area. Because we've got a lot of water. We've got the wettest spot in the world in Mount Wailiali. We have ground aquifers. We have wells. We have reservoirs in other areas. And dairies require a lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
But don't have it be near a beach. Why wreck your coasts? Why wreck your reefs, you know? And we are. We're frightened. We really are frightened. I mean, this is our home. This is a beautiful place. People come from all over the world to see this place. We got a 3-star rating on Poipu Beach last year. You know, the cleanliness of the water was unsurpassed. And when we went down and had a petition signing at Poipu Beach,
mm-hmm.
lifeguards came up to us and said, we want to sign that. We know the way the current flows. We know it flows from Mahalapu right into Poipu Beach, right into the Keiki Pool. That eddy's going to come right in here, and it's going to have the bacteria, and we're not going to pass anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted their name on the dotted line.
Right. And this fact sheet, if we can, there are a couple.
Ahead.
The milking parlor will house 60-stall rotary milking platforms, precision agricultural model uses. Uses technology to monitor the health of cows, milk, and quality and pasture productivity and for maximum efficiency. Now, it talks about economics. Local milk production will reach 20%, including Hawaii dairy farms, roughly 3.7 million gallons per year at steady state operations, reducing our dependence on imported milk. Statewide distribution of more local milk at current market prices. There will be 10 to 15 full-time operational jobs at the farm, construction jobs, including capacity building for local suppliers, and 17.5 million plus million investment in local food production, and first commercial use of important agricultural lands on Kauai. I jumbled them all together. But
yeah.
Is there anything that you've seen this before? But is there anything in that? The jobs, for example, 10
well,
to 15?
You know, they do have a fancy plan for their milking dairy, and that's great. And that's so they don't have a lot of personnel. They're going to be able to run this dairy, they say, with 10 to 15 full-time employees.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really adding to our labor force. Not really expanding the labor force here. The production of 3.7 million gallons of milk a year. And did you notice, Carol, they said at current market price.
Mm-hmm.
The dairy has answered questions many, many times and said, no, what we're doing is not going to reduce the price of the milk.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't intend, it is going to be sold to Metalgold. The reality is that once Hawaii Dairy Farms sells the bulk milk to Metalgold, which is what they're doing. They've got a contract with Metalgold. They said announced that publicly. Metalgold is going to handle it. Metalgold will process it, bottle it, and sell it, and Metalgold will set the price. And when they're saying it's going to keep milk at the current market price, flying it in from the mainland keeps it at the current marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
The Costco's importing it keeps it up. Costco's sale of milk has probably done more than anything else for the state to lower the price of milk, Costco
mm-hmm.
and Walmart, right?
Mm-hmm.
because they bring it in and they do offer competitive prices, and so they can't go to $8 or $9 or $10 a gallon. And Big Save does have to have, and times markets do have to have, lower prices to compete with those operations.
Let me ask you a question, and help me if you could. And the numbers that they give here, the 3.7 million gallons, was that based on the original math that they had and the number of cows that they had? And if they're agreeing to cut back and make their herds and what have you small in various areas, reducing that, is this, would the numbers stay the same? Or was when they get up running, and what time frame is this going to take place? If they're making agreements and environmental impact statements says, well, you can't, will it be feasible?
There's a potential that the environmental impact statement will establish that they can't have more than 300 cows in that valley safely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we anticipate that that would be the case, because one of the gentlemen who looked at this operation from the College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources, CTAR, said that just answering a hypothetical question, if the grass in there was guinea grass and they could graze all 578 acres, he couldn't conceive of that site supporting more than 372 cows. So an EIS statement may help to get the herd lowered, but to answer your question directly, those numbers, the 3.7 million, were based on the 1,880 cows of that fact sheet.
Mm-hmm.
They've scaled down to 699 pregnant cows, and they admit within months that number will double. Some of the cattle will have a single cow, some will have twins.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are girls will be kept and raised. Some of the boys will be kept, but most of the boys will be culled. Some won't survive because they wean them from their mother within days, if not the same day of the birth.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the mother bonds with the cow, as Professor Kranz told me, the cow won't let the milk down, even with the machine on her to milk her. If she bonds with the cow and there's this bleeding and horrible noise, I mean, the baby cows cry, the mothers cry, and it's really a very sad process.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of residences within 1.7 miles of that dairy that are going to hear all that.
Mm-hmm. And this fact sheet, this portion that I'm sure you've already spoken to, but development timeline. It says here, the fact sheet says the NRCS permit completed. Animal feed operations AFO permit in progress. Comprehensive nutrient management plan in progress.
Yeah, their first nutrient management plan submitted to the state wasn't one, so they got it returned to them and they were asked to redo it. Sina Pooter told us that herself. And they did submit a second and a third plan to the State Department of Health. Their current nutrient management plan is the one that's still being reviewed. Again, there is no NRCS permit. NRCS does not issue permits. So that statement on that sheet of paper is incorrect. It's false.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna Hopwood of the NRCS office, who's the assistant director of field service, said she can't explain why they would put that in print, because there's no such thing. And that gets back to what I hearkened to earlier. If an agency doesn't send in proper information about rainfall, doesn't openly acknowledge problems that New Zealand has had with the model they intend to use and intensify, doesn't do a soil study, they didn't do a soil study. When they submitted their first plan, Kyle Dotta says we are going to be good stewards of the land, we are good stewards of the land, but yet their plan, when it was first filed with the state, was filed without a soil study, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And it still has never had a stormwater drainage study, to my knowledge. I've never seen one in print. And the closest we got to that was the one put out by the NRCS office. And it was done at the private request. It was logged onto the World Wide Web, not made public, not identified to the state. The state was not told about the NRCS plan until the agricultural engineer found it for Kawailoa Development Company.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the things that we are trying to do as a community is we're trying to be as informed as we can and be as up-to-date as we can on their plan. And we're doing that to protect ourselves and to protect our homes and to protect the environment because many of us absolutely love Mahalapu. So there's going to be another town meeting, much like the one we had October 23rd. We're going to have another one at Kaloa Neighborhood Center on December 11th at 6:30 in the evening. So if anyone is listening to your program that wants to attend, it's open to the public. It's open for Hawaii Dairy Farms. We printed public notices last time in the paper. We've sent out mailers to all the zip codes in the surrounding area. And we have really tried, Carol, to be open and totally transparent in what we're finding, in what we're coming up with, in what our concerns are.
Mm-hmm. Now, this fact sheet, it says a timeline, pending permit approvals, groundbreaking is in spring, cow arrival is in late summer, early fall, and milk production in early 2015. Taking that into consideration, excluding any challenges that may be brought from your organization or others or the lawsuit, if with them modifying their earlier schedules, do you think it would be postponed or put back even later?
Yes, I do. By their own choice, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they said in their press release that the environmental impact statement will take 6 to 9 months to do, we hope they retain, you know, a recognized environmental engineering firm to do the statement. But the public has, in the EIS process, the public has an opportunity for input. The public has an opportunity to impact the scope of the EIS. There's a lot that we'll be able to do in the next 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really sincerely hope that someone out there is looking at this with an eye to where else could this be that it won't have the impact that it's going to have to this area.
Right, and it would contribute to the economy, just the location and addressing those concerns.
Yeah, location is really the big concern. People are not opposed to the idea of having a dairy, even if the milk is going off island and going to be sold elsewhere. People of Kauai are, a lot of them are agriculturally based and support agriculture.
Mm-hmm. It's a business, and everybody has a right to run a business.
Right.
It's just to be sound in its environmental impacts or avoiding impacts that could be easily avoided or mitigated.
Right. But when it's put so close to residences and hotels, and as one of our members said, and you might have seen it when you watched the neighborhood meeting that we had October 23rd, who testified, you know, honestly, with personal experience and said, I lived within 2 miles of one. We had to wear long sleeves, long pants, socks in all the warm months of the year because of the biting flies. We couldn't go out in our yard and have a backyard barbecue. I mean, that's impacting quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not needed.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't have to happen. We have a lot of open land on this island that can be used other than putting it right next to a established residential area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one email that caught me interesting. It was to you from Sina, and she stated, hi, Bridget and Becky. I just wanted to inform you, inform both of you that the wastewater branch has completed our review of the waste management plan. Please see the attached letter. Since we are completed with our review, I don't think that it will be necessary to meet. That seems to be the standard practice of this wastewater branch for me. This is, they want to run ahead. It seems that they're behind most of the times, and then they run ahead. And when they make a decision like this, you may have had other questions or other things. Or do you still have things that she has not answered or you want to raise with them or that goes unanswered?
Well, when we read the attached letter that said I've not approved it and I'm not doing anything further, we didn't understand that. So I sent an email in follow-up to that that said, we really do need to meet because this letter wasn't helpful and we're totally confused. And then we went down there and met with her and found that the review process wasn't over at all. that they're still testing water quality. They're still looking for the source of pollution. In the process, it came out, Carol, that the state themselves had issued a permit to wastewater treatment engineers on Kauai, aqua engineers, to disc in treated human sludge in a part of Mahalapu Valley. And at that point, the state was sitting in the chair thinking, we've issued permits for dumping in this same valley that these people are bringing to our attention may not be a good location for such dumping. But as she said, their permits were for no more than 260 tons per year of dry matter. The dry matter measurement for the cows is going to be 3,600 tons per year in that valley. But the state was sufficiently concerned by the data we presented to them that they made a determination to non-renew the permits to the aqua engineers and the other companies that are dumping human treated human sludge. So they're having to find locations that aren't adjacent to the ocean, which is totally in keeping with the state's recent decision that the cesspools have to be changed, right?
Right.
They don't want cesspools. They want everybody to go in septic and sewer. And so I'm saying, okay, if they're worried about 14,000 households that on this island remaining that have cesspools, that can't possibly compare to 3 million gallons of wet manure per month, 1.8 billion gallons of manure in 6 months, you know, and that's going on the ground where rainfall and stormwater runoff can take it zooming into the ocean, and yet we're worried about 14,000 cesspools that need to convert. It's like it doesn't square.
So we did tell her
we needed to meet. She did agree to see us, and we met with her October 1st and learned the things I just mentioned.
Okay.
They're absolutely still working on
it. So it was worth meeting, and there were needs to continue to meet.
Yes, and there are still needs to continue to meet. And I think the meetings have been good, and I think the state has seen, you know, that we don't have, it's not a grudge match. It's not a gripe just to be griping, and someone said, oh, Kauai just has naysayers. It's not true. You know, we really have legitimate concerns. The state has recognized those concerns, and they have received our input and acted on it. So I think we'll keep the dialogue going with the state. I haven't had the same level of response from the dairy farm, and many of our hui wrote directly to the board of directors. We had at least 14 letters that I know of that went to Piero Mediar and the board of directors for Ulupono, trying to bring to their attention the issues, you know, trying to say, look, you didn't test the soil, you didn't have the right readings on the water, you didn't exactly tell us the truth about New Zealand, you know, why couldn't the NRCS report be disclosed? The fact that you sat on it, never let us know it had been done for you, not good. Doesn't give people confidence that they're being at all transparent, rather that they're being devious is what you're left with.
Concealment. If you hold on, there's a caller here if you'd like.
Sure.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for joining us. You have a comment, a question?
Yeah, good morning. You know, in the North Shore area along the highway there and all the surfing spots and all the million-dollar homes on the Mackay side of the highway, on the Mauka side, there have been dairy farms along there for 100 years, cattle farms. I wonder what the impact had been throughout the years. I noticed had family that lived on one of the beach properties. During heavy storms, the water would flood across the highway, come down the mountain, through the dairy farms, across the street, and into the ocean. I wonder what the impact had been, or had it ever been studied in the past 100 years. I know my friend just sold the last of her dairy cattle because she can't find, you know, it's too expensive to have workers. That's my comment.
Now, you say the North Shore, are you speaking Kauai or Oahu?
Oahu, from Haleiwa on the highway there. I have a friend who had a dairy farm. She just been there for years. She recently sold all her cattle because of cost of Nobody well, wants to work dairy farm. I wonder if there's been an impact as far as tons of cow manure, you know, washing across the street during floods and all that. If there were any attempts to mitigate it, that's my question. And I'll hang up and listen to the lady's response. Thank you.
Well, this is an evolution, and so these things, I'm sure there are impacts. How did we quantify them? What information we draw on, but when we look today.
We did have an experience here on the North Shore in Kauai, Carol.
Uh-huh.
And we had the Moloa'a dairy, and it did have runoff during storm, as he was just describing. And it did go into neighboring properties, and it did go out to the reef. And it is recognized as one of the causes of reef death in that coastline along Moloa'a. The state recognized it, and the dairy recognized it, and Meadow Gold decided to close because of it.
Mm-hmm.
In general, from everything we've been able to find nationally throughout the United States and internationally, most governmental agencies have come to a real strong recognition that these types of operations need to be inland and away from fresh bodies of water.
Mm-hmm. And in this tropical setting, the CETAR and all, the eutrophication is a natural process, but when you add methanes and ammonias and all of the other things, it makes for a different cocktail.
It does. And one of the things that's produced that the average person doesn't know about until you start reading, you know those effluent ponds that we talked about that are going to hold the washing of the urine and fecal material from the milking parlor and the raceways?
Mm-hmm.
When they de-sludge, they've been percolating under there, and gases have been forming. And when they de-sludge, there's a real large emission of a gas called hydrogen sulfide. And that gas has been responsible for overpowering dairy workers and killing them.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, from our perspective for the environment, if that hydrogen sulfide gas mixes with moisture, it becomes sulfuric acid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some reports in the East Coast, up in the New York area, where people have had eyelids burned, throats burned, just by inhaling the hydrogen sulfide gas that's bonded with moisture in the air and then impacts
mm-hmm.
you know, people in the area. And this happens to people that live next to the farm.
Yep.
You know,
yeah.
I had read one account where this person had to have their eyelids removed because the sulfuric acid had hit them just in the air, and they felt a stinging. They thought a bug bit them, and they went in and washed their eye, and the stinging didn't stop, and they went to the doctor, and, you know, the sulfuric acid had already done its damage. So there is a lot of fallout that can happen. So these things do really have to be put in a safe place, not close to residences and small children and older people
mm-hmm.
that are particularly vulnerable.
And it's necessary in a good, everything is in pristine, but when you reduce it with turbidity, the green water from the manure, that's going to block out some of the sunlight. And it may contribute, depending on hot days or how shallow the water is or the exchange of water not diluted, it could create problems for the marine life and the tide pool animals. That we won't see. And when there are larvae and other things in the streams and down in the pools, that too may be a problem. So that's why it's so important to at least try to mitigate it or anticipate or address those issues, try to avoid them, right?
Truly, yes. And that's why we are, for whatever the forces are that we're brought to bear, we're really optimistic that an EIS is going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Because that, we hope, will disclose and concretize a lot of these issues and really make it plain to where all sides can see the problem
mm-hmm.
and rethink this operation. Not the least of which is that our one large reservoir on Kauai, the Waitaha Reservoir, happens to be on Grove farmland, happens to be water that's diverted from the Hulea River stream. It's an old sugarcane diversion, Carol,
mm-hmm.
that's never been taken down. And Grove Farm has promised the dairy 3 million gallons, up to 3 million gallons a day of that water. Well, those are waters of the state. They're Hawaiian waters. And that's something that was talked about in several recent Hawaii State Supreme Court cases. Kauai Springs was the most recent one that affected our island. There was one on Maui. There was a Kaualoa action. But it came out, the Supreme Court pointed out, these waters belong to the people of the state of Hawaii. And there's some issue about whether or not Grove Farm can do this, can give away 3 million gallons a day as part of their lease agreement mm-hmm. with the dairy farm. And as one of our councilmen said to the Kyle Dada, what's your plan if the Hawaiians are successful in requiring this diversion to be taken down and get the natural flow of the stream back like they did on Maui to help with their development of their taro farms and restore the water to the taro farmers? What's your plan for water for your dairy if you can't access the 3 million gallons a day from the Waitau Reservoir?
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Dada's response thus far to us and to the county councilman was, well, you'll have to talk to Grove Farm because that's a lease term, and they will then be in breach of their lease. So they don't have a backup plan yet, but we're hoping with the environmental impact statement that will get flushed out as well.
Now, you have a petition, do you? And would you like to solicit people to participate and sign it?
Absolutely.
If you could direct them to it and contact information for you?
Sure. That would be wonderful. Anyone that's listening to this that's at all interested, please visit the website, Friends of Mahalapu. And Mahalapu is spelt, it's really Mahaulepu is the Hawaiian pronunciation, but it's Mahaulepu. So friendsofmahalapu.org. There is a petition on that site, and you can read it. It's pretty well described. It's easy to sign. And it is, the intended recipient is the Department of Health, to let the director know that people do care, don't want the coastline. You know, there's development and development and development, and how much are we going to allow at the risk and the cost of our communities and our coastlines and our beaches? I mean, you know, we can get ruined. We can become another Miami Beach or any number of overdeveloped areas. Or we can fight now and keep safe the environment and keep mm-hmm. the ability to attract tourists mm-hmm. who enjoy the area and allow residents to enjoy their home in the way that they know it and want their keiki to know it and the keiki after them.
And what I'd like to point out is that in the Chesapeake Bay, Fisteria, and was directly related to the hog farming and what have you, and the waste and what being pumped and dumped and flowed into that. So we've already had our teachings and opportunities to know how to approach this a little bit better. So hopefully good minds will prevail. And one thing I wanted to ask, I didn't get the details and I was going to go online. I do recall reading that Governor Abercrombie was with Omidar in some business transaction. And I hope that some of the listeners out there would express some concerns or if they have any. What do you think about that? Maybe we can take that up next week as to if this is a major operation, several projects being presented by this company or this individual, and the governor gets in business deals with them. Not normally, state workers or city workers, government workers have to wait a year to get involved. But anyway, just asking. I thought I'd toss that out there. But anyway, is there anything in closing or any final word on this, Bridget?
No, just visit our website, and there's a great slideshow of Mahalapu. People can see what we're trying to protect. There's a good listing of the native species. The basis for our concerns are there. We've loaded the dairy farm's fact sheet. We've loaded our fact sheet in contrast. We've loaded the three plans that the dairy farm has submitted to the state for approval, and the one that's most current is named current. I think people can find whatever they want, and if there's any information that anybody needs, you can also email us at friendsofmahalapu@gmail.com. It's friendsofmahalapu, all one word, @gmail.com. And normally Mahalapu has an Aquino after the second A, you know, M-A-H-A, Aquino, and then U-L-E-P-U. But if, obviously in the site, it has to just be one word, friendsofmahalapu.org and friendsofmahalapu@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, Bridget Hammerquist, thank you for joining me. And if you have any other comments before closing, feel free to go ahead. And I hope that you consider joining us again in the future and keep us updated.
Thank you, Carol.
All right. Aloha.
Good of you to have us. Aloha.
Thank you. Caller, go ahead. Do you have a comment or question?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
Am I on the air?
Yes.
Yes, hello. I wanted to make sure that Bridget had talked about the jobs in this area giving 12 to 15 jobs. The Hyatt next door has 1,000 jobs, and I wanted to make sure that the listeners know that they're already losing business on the people that usually call in. And they're hearing about the dairy, and they're canceling meetings because they're afraid the dairy will come in. And I just wanted to make sure that they do realize what Bridget was saying, is that the South Shore is 23% to 25% of all the tax revenue into Kauai. And the dairy would just be devastating, and the Hyatt could lose 50%, 75% of their jobs. That's all I had to say.
Okay, thank you, caller, for joining in. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha. Well, as you can see, there's many issues. We'll reach out to Hawaii dairy farmers and see if they will be willing to talk to us. And hopefully, I don't get caught up in this web of deceit by the state health department. As by, I did make a request for the documents and some other documents, and we'll see if we get the old onesie-twosie, you know. They're never open until you have to argue and badger and fight and threaten to take legal actions for them to just... and I don't recall seeing anything where the agencies involved took upon themselves to initiate just compare the laws to the actions being taken up there. So, again, we have to consider who we're dealing with. This is the state health department under Neil Abercrombie, and it comes to no surprise that he would be not caring what the image to engage in a business. But maybe that is his right to do that. But, again, impressions are the things we're concerned with. And so it's not that the dairy should not exist or should not be allowed. It is a matter of making sure that there is a sound environmental approach. You can't guarantee protection 100%, but at least you can mitigate it and anticipate and be ready if there are problems. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question. Well, I guess we missed that one. Anyway, I want to share with you, changing tracks here for just briefly, the Kaka'ako. We'll call it the Kaka'ako Makai District. And I want, you know, we've talked about, we see their building and they're going to Howard Hughes, another one of those things that big money comes in and thanks to Abercrombie and his HCDA and those folks. But I'm going to try and post a document up on the website at carolcox.com. And you do know that Kaka'ako, and some folks take it lightly, that Kaka'ako itself was a incinerator site, a dump site in the landfill. And there were many, many, many things that went on there. They stored and dumped and placed materials containing PCBs. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Oh, sorry, Carol. I just Yes.
I had another question for you regarding that lady, but I had another call. But I didn't hear, does she own property adjacent to the her home is next to the proposed dairy?
I don't know.
That might be a good question to ask.
Okay, and then what would be the follow-up question? If she owns it, meaning that she should...
Probably generating the anti-dairy business so that it was not built next to her residence.
Well, I didn't hear. It may be. I mean, all things are possible. But on the other hand, if I went and built a outhouse business right next to your house, you'd be pissed too. So I would think I wouldn't want to cast aspersion.
our family home was in Manoa near the University of Hawaii.
Yeah.
For many, many years, they had a huge dairy farm there where they studied the agricultural. And you could smell the wind, prevailing winds. You smell the dairy. And we live almost, jumped over the fence would be on the campus. Nobody ever complained, I guess. We accepted the smell of the dairy.
Well, I guess it probably, I wouldn't care to trust everything to say that nobody complained. It was just that maybe you had a captive audience or you had people who were just happy to be living there, and it was part of the landscape.
That was part of the landscape, and the manure, they weren't cheap. It was high-priced neighborhood.
But again, I understand if something is not compatible to a certain area, it doesn't make the person, we shouldn't view that person with jaundiced eyes that they want to protect. Let's just say if she was interested in just protecting her own self-interest, that does not negate or throw out the fact that there are these impacts that do exist or that will be presented and that we can't overlook them. So it may be. I would defer to that and say, let's just assume she is concerned about her own impacts that she might experience. Let's just take that as a given. But then does that negate all of the other real impacts? So that would be the biggest question that I would
have. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, of course, if it's zoned for agricultural, then the thing is to have the zoning changed.
Yeah, and the type, when something is zoned for agriculture, you wouldn't want to start growing obnoxious weeds or things that present a greater problem to the surrounding community. You would want it to be compatible and not be disruptive, you see.
Well, my uncle lives in a home in Waianae, and next door is a big farm, so...
Well, I used to live on a farm in rural area, and it was the joy of no, this is a lie. It's not the joy, but
you probably surmised my question is maybe this woman has an ulterior motive.
Well, maybe she does, and that could be a given. But I would say we'll deal with her as it comes. But the reality is that there are these real issues. And that whether it was sitting in the middle of Beverly Hills or Watts, it's still people have that right to demand. This is what I've built. And so, therefore, you can't come in and big business can't create a problem for me.
Yeah, my question was, I wonder if she lives, her residence is next door to the proposed dairy.
I will ask that, okay? And we'll find out.
Hey, okay. Thanks for listening, sir.
Thank you, sir. Caller, go ahead with your comment and question, please.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Cox. Last week I told you that President Obama vetoed a bill that would prevent people on welfare from working. That particular bill was passed by the Republicans in 1996. It's called the Welfare Reform Act.
Okay.
President Obama unilaterally banned the work requirement. The 1996 Welfare Reform Act that the Republicans passed back then, President Obama unilaterally banned the work requirement.
Okay, so what are you suggesting? We go up then, rip his arms off, or what do you would like me to do?
I think because a lot of these recipients are young men, and they collect welfare. I think we should have some form of ration work for them.
Okay. Well, I agree, and just to speak in generic terms, I don't know if we would be speaking specific to what you first inject. Obama did something unilaterally, so that one word causes me a little concern rather than engage. And you say he passed a bill that the Republicans had already passed, so.
No, he banned.
Okay, banned. Okay, so the Republicans then, let them fight it out. I mean, they will be more informed than you and I to sit here and say it's young guys, because when we talk about, let's go to Iowa and look at the big farmers there that's on welfare. Let's go to Kauai and look at some of the people that are supposedly cattle ranching on state land and getting subsidies from Agriculture Department. So let's talk next week. Let's talk next week on this, and I welcome your comments, but, you know, let's be open about it. And when we use the term welfare, let's not limit it to the stratas of people that the guy that's driving a pink Cadillac with some chicks in the back. Let's talk about the guy who's driving a SUV or a four-wheel drive truck with a horse trailer that's paying no taxes and making subsidies from agriculture. So let's talk later, okay?
Hey, thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Caller, go ahead with your comments or question. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Carol, this is Bridget.
Yes.
I just wanted to check back and let you know I don't live anywhere near the dairy.
Okay.
Dairy site. I'm about 4.5 miles from there.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay. I listened to the caller and I just thought that might be helpful.
All right. And it's a healthy question, so.
No, I appreciate the question. I should have thought to. I also don't work for any of the resorts, and I'm fully retired and I'm raising grandchildren.
Isn't it amazing the people that we find ourselves doing it for free, working on behalf of the environment and others?
Mm-hmm.
And we're challenged with these kinds of questions frequently. So
that's okay. It's a healthy question.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Carol.
Aloha.
Thanks again for having us on.
Thank you.
Aloha.
All righty, Ed, I hope that helped in answering the question, and my friend that just called about the agriculture and the welfare, and let's talk about that, because the war on poverty and the war on homelessness, we see millions of dollars just sitting there in the city coffers, and they're using it improperly and illegally, and nobody goes to jail, and yet they're going over now to ferret out the people that are getting free rent and working a job and what have you. So we have to be careful when we talk about the thing of welfare. It's the welfare of the nation that if we don't get our act together, we're going to all be doing nothing but being obliged or obligated to other countries. So we better stop pulling at one another and try to fix what we have. People, the streets are bulging with people and children. So figure that one out, and then we can answer all those other questions. A little compassion will take us a long way. Aloha. I'll see you next week.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.